order, and he glanced toward the warlock, who was making every torch fall. Alec was used to being able to see the whole battle, fighting at a distance. Too late, he saw the blade in Clive Breakspear's free hand, aimed for his heart. Raphael barreled out of the shadows and sank his teeth deep into Breakspear's wrist. The blade dropped to the stone. The man roared, and with all the Nephilim strength that should be used to shield the defenseless, he hurled Raphael's body into the cage bars. There was a sickening crack. Alec shouted, "No!" He backhanded Clive Breakspear in the face. The warlock dashed a torch at his feet, and Alec stepped over the flames and seized him by the throat, then lifted him like a doll and smashed the warlock's skull against Breakspear's forehead. The warlock's eyes rolled back, but Breakspear screamed in outrage and charged at Alec. There was still a Seraph blade shining in his hand, so Alec broke that hand, then used his hold on it to force the corrupt Shadow Hunter to his knees. Alec stood over them, panting so hard his chest felt as if it would split apart. He wanted to kill them both. Only Raphael was here. Magnus and Max were at home, waiting for him. Tessa, Jem, and Lily had made short work of the Shadow Hunters attacking them. Alec turned to Tessa now. "Will you enchant ropes to hold them?" he asked. "They have to stand trial." Tessa moved forward. So did Lily. Alec knew the situation was desperate because Lily didn't make a joke about murdering them. Alec was too close to the edge. He was afraid he would have taken her up on it. He went to the place where Raphael lay, his body a small wretched shape thrown into the dirt. Alec pulled Rafe into his arms, feeling his throat close up. He understood now what he had found here in Buenos Aires. He understood that it might be too late. Raphael's grubby face was still. He was barely breathing. Jem came to kneel beside them. "I'm so sorry. He slipped the rope, and I came in for him, but...
"It isn't your fault," Alec said numbly.
Jem said, "Give him to me." Alec stared at Jem, then bundled Rafe into his arms. "Take care of him," he said. "Please." Jem took Rafe and ran toward Tessa, and together they rushed up the stone steps. There was still orange magic in the air, and the flames had caught in earnest. Smoke was rising fast, in a thick, choking cloud. One of the werewolf women reached out a thin hand and clutched the bars.
"Help us!"
Alec took an axe with an electrum head from his belt and struck open the lock on her cage.
"That's what I'm here to do."
He paused. "Lily, are there keys on that warlock?"
"Yep," said Lily. "Just grabbed them. I'll open the doors with the keys and you can keep doing your cool dramatic axe thing."
"Fine," said Alec.
The werewolf woman who had spoken to him bolted out the door as soon as she was free. The woman in the next cage couldn't walk. Alec walked into the cage and knelt beside her, and that was when he heard the sounds of a fight breaking out at the top of the stairs. He picked the woman up and ran for the stairs. Tessa and Jem were in the hall, almost at the doors. The burning house was crawling with Shadow Hunters. Jem couldn't fight because he was holding Raphael. Tessa was doing her best to clear a way for them, but Raphael needed Tessa's help, too. One man shouted, "Where's our leader?"
"You call that a leader?"
Alec shouted back. He looked at the woman in his arms, then held her out so the Shadow Hunters of the Buenos Aires Institute could see. He helped a warlock do this. He crushed a child's body against a wall. Is that what you want to lead you? Is that what you want to be? Several Shadow Hunters turned to him in total puzzlement. Lily quickly shouted out a translation. Joaquin stepped forward. Lily said quietly. He told them to stand down. The man who'd shouted for his leader hit Joaquin across the mouth. Another Shadow Hunter shouted in startled fury and produced a whip, defending Joaquin. Alec ran his eyes over the crowd. Some of the Shadow Hunters looked uncertain, but Shadow Hunters were soldiers. Too many of them were intent on following whatever orders they had been given, fighting Joaquin and Alec and whoever else stood in their way to get to an unworthy leader. They were blocking Jem and Tessa's way. They were keeping Rafe from help. The doors of the burning house burst open.
The queen of the shadow market stood outlined against the smoke. "Get to Alec!" Juliet shouted, and a dozen werewolves and vampires sprang. Juliet cleared a path. Jem and Tessa slipped out the door. Rafe was out of this place of filth and smoke. Alec fought toward Juliet.
"Mon Dieu,"
she breathed when she saw the woman in Alec's arms. She made a gesture, and a warlock jumped to take the unconscious werewolf out into the night. "There are more women down there," Alec said. "I'll get them. Some of the shadow hunters are on our side." Juliet nodded.
"Which ones?"
Alec turned to see Joaquin fighting two shadow hunters at once. The man with the whip who'd come to help him was down. "That one," said Alec, "and whoever else he tells you." Juliet set her jaw and strode across the green quartz floor to Joaquin's side. She tapped one of the men fighting him on the shoulder. When he turned, she ripped out his throat with one clawed hand.
"Maybe take them alive," said Alec.
"Not that guy, obviously." Joaquin was staring at Juliet with eyes gone enormous. Alec remembered that Joaquin had heard tales of horror about the queen of the shadow market. Juliet, with blood on her hands and firelight in her snarled hair, might not be doing a lot to dispel that image.
"Don't hurt her,"
Alec cried.
"She's with us."
"Oh, good," said Joaquin. Juliet squinted at him suspiciously through the smoke.
"You're not evil?"
"Trying not to be," said Joaquin.
"Bien," said Juliet. "Show me who to kill, I mean, take alive if possible."
Alec left them to it. He spun around and raced back down the stairs, Lily at his heels. The smoke was thick in the passage below by now. Alec saw there were shadow hunters there already, getting Clyde Breakspear and his warlock confederate out. Alec's lip curled. "If your loyalty is to the Clave, put a watch on them. They're going to stand trial." He and Lily opened the remaining doors. The women who could move on their own did. Too many could not. Alec picked up one woman after another and carried them out. Lily helped women who needed support to walk. Alec gave the women to the downworlders of the shadow market whenever he could, so he was able to get back to the basement faster. Alec reached the top of the stairs with another woman and saw that the hall was deserted, taken over by smoke and falling masonry. Everyone had fled the death trap this building had become. Alec bundled the woman into Lily's arms. Lily was small enough that it was difficult, but she was strong enough to bear her weight.
"Take her! I have to get the others!"
"I don't want to go," Lily shouted over the crackling fire. "I don't ever want to abandon anybody again."
"You won't! Lily, go!"
Lily stumbled for the door under her heavy burden, sobbing. Alec turned back. The smoke had turned the whole world into a gray hell. He couldn't see or breathe. A hand caught his shoulder. Joaquin stood behind him.
"You can't go down there," he panted. "I'm so sorry about those women, but they're..."
"Downworlders," Alec said icily.
"It's too dangerous, and you have a lot to go back to."
Magnus and Max. If Alec closed his eyes, he could see them with absolute clarity. But he knew he had to be worthy of going back to them. Joaquin was still holding on to him. Alec shrugged him off, and not gently. "I will not leave one woman down there, abused and forgotten," he said. "Not one. No real shadow hunter would." He looked over his shoulder at Joaquin as he was going down the steps into hell. "You can leave," said Alec. "If you do, you can still call yourself a shadow hunter. But will you be one?" Raphael lay on the cobbled street as Jem and Tessa hovered over him. Jem used every silent enchantment he had learned among the Silent Brothers. Tessa whispered every healing spell she had learned in the Spiral Labyrinth. Jem could tell, from long, bitter experience, that there was too much broken and bruised within that small body. There was a fire burning and a battle raging. Jem could not pay attention to any of it, could not bring himself to care about anything but the child under his hands.
"Dittany, Jem," Tessa whispered desperately. "I need Dittany."
Jem climbed to his feet, searching the crowd. There were so many from the shadow market here. There was surely one who could help. His gaze fell on Mother Hawthorne, with starlight on her dandelion hair. She met his eyes and made to run. Jem was fast as a shadow hunter still, when he had to be. He was at her side in a moment, catching her wrist. Do you have Dittany?
If I do, snarled Mother Hawthorne, why should I give it to you?
I know what you did more than a century ago, he said. I know better than you do. The trick you played, causing one shadow hunter to poison another. It poisoned an unborn child. Does that amuse you?
The fairy's mouth went slack.
That child died because of you, said Jem. Now there is another child who needs help. I could take the herb from you. I will, if I have to. But I'm giving you the chance to make another choice.
It's too late, said Mother Hawthorne, and Jem knew she was thinking of Oraline.
Yes, said Jem, merciless. It's too late to save the ones we lost. But this child is not lost yet. This choice is not lost yet. Choose. Mother Hawthorne turned her face away, her mouth set in bitter lines. But she reached inside the worn pouch at her belt and put the herb into his hand. Jem took it and raced back to Tessa. Raphael's body was arching under her hands. The Dittany flared to life at her touch, and Jem joined his hands with Tessa's, joined his voice with hers as they spoke in all the languages they had ever taught each other. Their words were a song, their linked hands magic, and they poured everything they knew together into the child. Raphael's eyes opened. There was a flash of Tessa's pearlescent magic in his dark irises. Then it was lost. The child sat up, looking perfectly all right, well and whole and somewhat annoyed. He gazed into their distraught faces and asked, in clipped Spanish,
Where is he?
He's in there, Lily answered. The narrow cobbled street was full of members of the shadow market seeing to the werewolf victims, or herding shadow hunters, with some different, deeply nervous-looking shadow hunters tentatively assisting, or trying to put out the flames. Lily was not doing any of that. She stared at the house with her arms crossed and her eyes dark with tears. As they watched, part of the roof collapsed. Rafe started forward. Tessa lunged and seized him, holding him as he strained against her grip. Jem stood.
No, Jem, said Tessa. Take the child. Let me go in.
Jem tried to take Rafe, but he was fighting them both. Then Rafe went still. Jem twisted around to see what the child was looking at. What everybody was looking at. There was a ripple in the crowd, then a hush. Jem did not think any of the Shadow Market or the Institute would forget what had happened here tonight. From the swirling smoke, out of the collapsing building, came two shadow hunters with werewolves in their arms. They walked tall, their faces grim, and people parted to let them pass. The women had been saved, and the child. Jem felt new resolution rise in him. Tessa was right. If Rosemary could be saved, he would save her. If there was a child, he and Tessa would stand between that child and the riders and the king. Alec carried the werewolf he bore to Tessa, who immediately began enchanting the smoke from her lungs. Then he dropped to his knees in front of Rafe.
Hey, my baby, said Alec. Are you all right?
Raphael might not entirely understand the language, but anyone could have understood the message of Alec on his knees in the rubble, the love and concern on his face. Raphael nodded, dust drifting from his curly hair, and walked into Alec's open arms. Alec folded the little boy against his chest.
Thank you both, Alec said to Tessa and Jem. You're heroes.
You're welcome, said Jem.
You're a moron, said Lily and put her face in her hands. Alec rose and patted her awkwardly on the back, Rafe held in the circle of his other arm. He turned to Juliet, who had called one of her warlocks over to see the werewolf in Joaquin's arms.
You got them all out?
Juliet smiled at them both, her expression wondering, as if she was young as Rafe and seeing magic for the first time.
You did it.
The werewolf woman who was looking after Rafe, said Alec.
Is she here?
Juliet looked at the ashes drifting on the cobbled streets. The fire was dying, now that Tessa could spare magic to cool the flames, but the house was a ruin.
No, said Juliet. My girls tell me she was one of the first to die.
I'm sorry, Alec told her,
Then his voice changed as he addressed Rafe. Rafe, I have to ask you something, he said.
Solo mio.
Steak? Lily smirked.
Damn it, said Alec. Sorry, Rafe, but will you come back with me to New York?
You can.
I have to talk to... If you don't like it there, you don't have to...
Rafe watched him stumble over his words.
I can't understand you, fool,
he said sweetly in Spanish, and tucked his head down under Alec's chin, his arms going around Alec's neck.
Okay, said Alec. Good, I think.
Tessa walked away from the burned-out building. There were several warlocks in the crowd watching her with awe, Jem noted proudly. She strode over to the bound warlock and the head of the Buenos Aires Institute.
Shall we ask Magnus to open a portal for them? She asked.
Not just yet, said Alec.
There was a change in his demeanor, his shoulders going back, his face stern. If it weren't for the child in his arms, he might have been fearsome. Alec Lightwood, leader of the Alliance, said, First, I want a word. Alec looked around at the assembled faces. His breathing felt as if it were tearing his throat. And his eyes were still stinging, but he was holding Rafe, so everything was perfectly all right. Except for the fact he had no idea what to say. He couldn't know how many of the Shadowhunters had cooperated with the capture and torture of these women. He suspected most of them had gone along with their leader's orders, but he didn't know how responsible that made them. If he arrested everybody, then the Institute would be left in empty ruin. The people here were owed protection.
Clive Breakspear, the head of the Buenos Aires Institute, broke the accords and will pay for it, he said at last and paused.
Lily, can you translate for me?
Absolutely, yes,
Lily said promptly and began to do so. Alec listened to her talk, watched the faces of the people listening, and saw a few smirks. Alec listened more intently and picked up a word.
Boludo,
Alec said to Jem.
What does that mean?
Jem coughed.
It's not a polite word.
I knew it,
Alec said. Lily, stop translating. Sorry, Jem, could you translate instead? Jem nodded.
I'll do my best.
The head of your institute has brought shame on us all, Alec told the Shadowhunters. I could bring everybody here to Alicante. I could have every one of you put to the trial of the sword. I know you were left after the war, to rebuild as best you could. And instead of leading you, this man brought more ruin. But the law says I should make each of you pay. Alec thought of Helen and Mark Blackthorne, cut off from their family by the cold peace. He thought of the way Magnus had sunk his face into his hands, despairing when the cold peace was passed. Alec never wanted to see that despair again. Every day since that day, he'd tried to work out ways that they could all live united.
What happened in that house should sicken any shadow hunter, said Alec. We have to earn back the trust of everyone we have wronged. Joaquin, you will know the names of every man who was in Breakspear's inner circle. They will go with their leader to stand trial. For the rest, it is time for a new leader, and a new chance to live as Nephilim should.
He glanced at Joaquin, who was wiping tears from his eyes. Alec frowned at him and mouthed, What?
Oh, it's just the way Jem is translating,
Joaquin explained.
I mean, your speech is good too, very stern. It makes me want to do everything you say. And Jem is basically repeating it, but it's the way he puts things, you know? It's beautiful.
Uh-huh, Alec said. Joaquin grabbed his free hand.
You be the new head of the Institute.
No, I will not, Alec snapped. People were always trying to make him head of Institutes, and it made Alec tired. He couldn't change enough if he took that kind of position. He had more important things to do.
No, repeated Alec, less grouchily but no less firmly. I'm not Clive Breakspear. I'm here to help you, not to take over. When you saw what was happening, you told your men to stand down. You should act as the head of your own institute until the consul can consider your case.
Joaquin stood amazed. Alec nodded at him.
You can work with the shadow market to rebuild, he said. I can provide you with resources.
So can I, said Juliet.
Joaquin stared at her, then swung his head back to Alec.
The queen of the shadow market, said Alec. Do you think you will be able to cooperate with her?
Juliet gave Joaquin a hostile look. There was still a suggestion of wolfish teeth in her mouth. Joaquin reached out as if to point to the blood on Juliet's hands, and Alec wondered for a nasty moment if the hatred between the Nephilim and the Downworlders in this place ran too deep.
Joaquin lifted Juliet's hand to his lips and kissed it.
I did not know, he breathed, that the queen of the shadow market was so beautiful.
Alec realized abruptly that he'd got everything wrong. Juliet mouthed several shocked demands for explanation and several more French expletives at Alec over Joaquin's bowed head.
Shadow hunters go so hard, Lily cackled.
Okay, fine. Glad we're all entering into the spirit of cooperation, said Alec and turned back to the crowd. This Nephilim child is now under the protection of the New York Institute, he said. Let's say this was a very standard and normal adoption. Let's say that though the head of your institute was corrupt, you survived under a bad leader and kept your honor. You hold Breakspear here until he can be tried. I will, of course, be returning here often to finalize details of the adoption, and I'll see what is happening. I want to believe in my fellow shadow hunters. Don't let me down.
He had no doubt Jem would make that sound better in Spanish. He turned back to Juliet, who had succeeded with difficulty in freeing her hand, and was retreating several steps under Joaquin's rapt gaze.
I should be getting back to my kids, she said, gesturing to the three kids.
Rosie gave Alec a little wave.
Oh, said Joaquin, a world of devastation in the syllable. Then he seemed to notice the lack of anyone else with the kids. Has it been very difficult, ruling the shadow market as a single mother? He asked, with sudden transparent hope. Well, none of this has exactly been easy, said Juliet. Joaquin beamed at her. That's wonderful.
What? Said Juliet. Joaquin was already heading toward the kids, on an obvious mission to endear himself to them. Alec hoped he had a lot of candies.
Juliet demanded,
Did he inhale a lot of smoke in there?
Probably, said Alec.
Shadow hunters get very set on things, said Lily.
Very set. Do you enjoy intensely serious romantic commitment? I don't know his name, Juliet pointed out.
She sneaked a self-conscious look over at Joaquin, whose endearing of himself seemed to be going very well. He had Juliet's warlock boy up on his shoulders.
His name's Joaquin, Alec said helpfully.
Juliet smiled.
I suppose I do like some shadow hunters. It's always a pleasure, Alec Lightwood. Thanks for everything.
It was nothing, said Alec.
Juliet strolled over to her kids, calling out to them to stop bothering the head of the institute. Alec looked around at the smoke drifting up to the stars, and the people in the streets all talking to each other without barriers. His eyes fell on Tessa and Jem.
Is it time to go home? Tessa asked.
Alec bit his lip, then nodded.
I'll text Magnus and ask him to open a portal.
There was an official protocol for adopting Shadowhunter children. He knew that he and Raphael would have to go back and forth from Buenos Aires several times, but this trip home would be worth it, even if it did not last long. Alec wanted to take Raphael home as soon as he could. He was tired, and he wanted to sleep in his own bed.
I don't suppose you have any ideas for how I can explain all this to Magnus, he asked Jem.
I think you'll find all the words you need, Alec, said Jem.
Thanks, that's very helpful. Jem smiled.
You even found a way to make a boy who doesn't like anybody like you. Thanks for all your help, Alec.
Alec wished he could help more, but he knew that at least for now he had done his part. They all had to trust each other, and he did trust his friends. If there was a Herondale in danger, they could not ask for better protection than Jem and Tessa.
I didn't do much, but it was good to see you both. Good luck with the Herondale.
Jem nodded.
Thank you. I think we might need it.
The portal was open and shimmering.
Bye, Jem, said Lily.
Oh, no nickname? Jem sounded pleased. Bye, Lily. Alex studied Rafe's face. Do you like me? He asked.
Rafe beamed and shook his head, then secured his arms more tightly around Alex's neck.
Oh, fine, that you understand, Alec grumbled. Come on, let's go home.
They stepped out of the portal into the electric starriness of a New York night. Alec could see his apartment down the street, the shimmer of a witch light behind pale blue curtains. He checked his watch. It was past Max's bedtime. Max fought bedtime like it was a demon, so Magnus was probably reading him a fifth story or singing him a third song. Every brown and white facade, every tree surrounded by wire on the cracked sidewalk, was dear to him. Alec used to think, when he was younger and felt as if he might die amid the crushing expectations and stone walls of the Institute, that he might feel better if he could live among the glass towers of Alicante. He hadn't known home was across the city waiting for him. He set Rafe on the steps of their apartment building and hopped him up one step, then swung him up another for sheer joy. He opened the door to home.
Alec, boomed a voice behind him. Alec jumped. Lily swiftly thrust Raphael behind the protection of Alec's front door and spun, lip curling from her needle-sharp teeth.
Alec turned as well, very slowly. He wasn't scared. He knew that voice.
Alec, said Robert Lightwood. We need to talk.
Okay, Dad, said Alec.
Lily, I need to explain everything to Magnus, so could you watch Rafe for a second? Lily nodded, still giving Robert the evil eye. There was a pause.
Hello, Lily, Robert added gruffly.
Who the hell are you? Asked Lily.
My dad, said Alec. The Inquisitor. The second most important person in the Clave. Someone you have met at least 26 times.
I don't recall, said Lily.
Alec's incredulous look was mirrored on his father's face. Lily, said Robert, I know you know me.
Never gonna, don't wanna.
Lily shut the door of Alec's apartment building in his father's face.
There was an awkward silence.
Sorry about that, said Alec finally.
All your other vampires like me, muttered Robert.
Alec blinked.
My other vampires?
Your friend Elliot reaches out whenever Lily leaves him in charge, explained Robert. He says he feels in need of Lightwood guidance. I visited the Hotel du Mort while you were away, and the vampires had a little dinner laid on just for me.
And they all talked to me about you. Elliot gave me his phone number. I presume so I can call him in case of emergencies.
Elliot's always charming to me.
Alec didn't know how to break it to his dad that Elliot was shamelessly hitting on him.
Huh, said Alec.
How is Magnus? Doing well? Dressing, uniquely?
Still gorgeous, said Alec defiantly.
Yeah.
His father looked abashed. Alec wasn't comfortable talking about how he felt, but he wasn't ashamed, and nobody was going to make him be ashamed ever again. He didn't know why his father never stopped poking at him, with the obsessive curiosity of a child poking at a scab. When he was younger, his dad used to joke insistently about Alec and girls. It was too painful to respond to those comments. Alec talked less and less. He remembered the day he walked out of the Institute to find Magnus. He had met Magnus twice and couldn't forget him. The Institute lay behind him, its stark outlines cutting the sky. He had been breathless and terrified, with one thought very clear in his mind. Is this how you want to live your whole life? Then he had gone to Magnus's place and asked him out. Alec couldn't bear the idea of one of his kids ever feeling trapped in their own home. He knew his dad hadn't meant to do that, but he had.
How's my little M&M? Asked Robert.
Max's middle name was Michael, after Robert's long-dead parabatai. Usually that was Alec's cue to take out his phone and show his dad all the new pictures of Max he possessed. But he was in a hurry today.
He's the best, Alec said. Is there something you need, Dad?
I heard some rumors about the Buenos Aires Institute, said Robert.
I heard you were there.
Right, said Alec.
Clive Breakspear, the head of the Institute, had his shadow hunters acting as mercenaries. They'll need to stand trial, but I encouraged a change in leadership.
The Buenos Aires Institute is going to be all right.
This is why I needed to talk to you, Alec, said Robert.
Alec studied the cracks in the sidewalk and tried to think of a way to explain everything that would implicate nobody else.
Do you know the positions of consul and inquisitor often stay within the same families? I've been thinking about what happens when the time comes for me to retire.
Alec stared at a weed growing through the cracks in the sidewalk.
I don't think Jace wants to be inquisitor, Dad.
Alec, said Robert, I'm not talking to Jace. I'm talking to you. Alec jolted.
What?
He looked up from the sidewalk. His father was smiling at him as if he meant it. Alec remembered his own words. The Inquisitor, the second most important person in the Clave. Alec allowed himself a moment to dream. Being Inquisitor and having a hand in the making of the law itself. Being able to get Aline and Helen back. Being able to put some sort of dent in the cold peace. Being able, Alec thought with slow dawning hope, to get married. Having his dad believe that Alec could do it. Alec knew his dad loved him, but that wasn't the same as his dad believing in him. He hadn't known that before.
I'm not saying it would be easy, said Robert. But several members of the Clave have mentioned it as a possibility. You know how popular you are with downworlders.
Not really, mumbled Alec.
A few more people in the Clave are coming around, said Robert. I have that tapestry up of you, and I take care to mention your name often.
Here I thought it was up because you love me.
Robert blinked at him, as if he was wounded by the joke.
Alec, it is. But I want this for you too. That's what I came here to ask. Do you want it for yourself?
Alec thought of the power to change the law from a sword that hurt people into a shield to defend them.
Yeah, said Alec. But you have to be sure you want me to have it, Dad. People won't be happy with me taking it, and once I have it, I'm going to split the Clave apart.
You are? Robert asked, his voice faint.
Because I have to, said Alec. Because everything has to change, for everybody's sake, and for Magnus and our kids.
Robert blinked.
You're what?
Oh, by the angel, said Alec. Please don't ask me any questions. I have to go. I have to talk to Magnus right away.
Robert said, I am very confused. I really have to go, said Alec.
Thanks, Dad. I mean it. Come for dinner again soon, all right? We'll talk more about the Inquisitor thing then.
All right, said Robert. I'd like that. When I had dinner with you three a few weeks ago, I don't remember the last time I had such a happy day.
Alec remembered how difficult it had been during Robert's visit to keep the conversation going, how only Max prattling at his grandpa's knee had broken the frequent silences. It broke Alec's heart to think Robert had thought of that strained, awkward dinner as happiness.
Come over any time, said Alec. Max loves seeing his grandpa, and
thank you, Dad. Thanks for believing in me.
Sorry if I caused you a lot of paperwork tonight.
You saved lives tonight, Alec, said Robert.
He took an awkward step toward Alec, and his hand lifted as if he was going to pat Alec on the shoulder. Then his hand dropped. He looked into Alec's face, and his eyes were so sad.
You're a good man, Alec, he said at last. You're a better man than I am.
Alec loved his father and would never be cruel to him, so he didn't say, I had to be. Instead, he reached out and pulled his father into an awkward hug, patting him on the shoulder before he stepped back.
We'll talk later.
Whenever you like, said Robert. I've got all the time in the world.
Alec waved to his dad, then ran up the steps of his building. He opened the door and bounded up his stairs to find Lily alone. The door of his loft was open a crack, light filtering through, but Lily was standing in the shadows and appeared to be filing her nails.
Lily, Alec said dangerously. Where is Raphael?
Oh, him?
Lily shrugged.
He heard Magnus singing some Indonesian lullaby and he bolted inside. Nothing I could do.
Shadowhunters. They're speedy.
Neither of them mentioned Magnus's wards, which couldn't be forced by any magic or any strength Alec knew of. Magnus didn't have wards up for anyone defenseless,
anyone who might need his help. Of course a child could go through. Alec fixed her with a reproachful glare, but was distracted by the deep, lovely murmur of Magnus's voice through the open door. His tone was warm and, as it often was, amused. Alec thought of Jem telling Tessa, "Your voice is the music I love best in all the world."
"Ah, there's that smile," said Lily. "It's been 2 days and I missed it."
Alec stopped smiling and made a face at her, but when he looked at her properly, she was fiddling with the zip of her leather jacket.
There was something about the set of her mouth, as if she had said it determinedly so it wouldn't tremble.
"Thanks for coming with me," Alec said.
"Also, you're the worst."
That made her smile. Lily wiggled her fingers in farewell.
"Don't you forget it."
She slipped away like a shadow, and Alec opened the door and stepped inside his apartment at last. His coffee machine was on the counter. His cat was sleeping on the sofa. There was a door standing open to a room he'd never seen before, which happened sometimes at his place. The room inside had golden brown floorboards and whitewashed walls. Magnus was standing in the room, with Rafe beside him. Magnus was wearing a red and gold silk robe, and Rafe's face was tipped up to watch Magnus as he produced a low, soothing stream of Spanish. It was a beautiful room. Alec realized Magnus knew he was there because Magnus started translating what he was saying into rapid English, switching between languages with fluid ease so everybody knew what was going on.
"Let's put away the cross for now and talk about organized religion later," said Magnus, snapping his fingers at the crucifix on the wall. "And let's have a window and let the light in. Do you like this one?"
He gestured easily to the wall, and a circular window opened up onto their street, showing a tree catching the moon. Then he gestured again, and the window was red and gold-stained glass.
"Or this one."
Magnus waved a third time, and the window was arched and tall as a church window.
"Or this one."
Rafe was nodding and nodding, his face wreathed in eager smiles. Magnus smiled down at him.
"Want me to just keep doing magic?"
Rafe nodded again, even more vehemently. Magnus laughed and set a hand on Rafe's curly head. Alec was about to warn Raphael, was shy at first, and would duck away, but Rafe didn't. He let Magnus stroke his hair, the rings on Magnus's hand catching the light through their new window. Magnus's smile went from gleaming to glowing. He met Alec's eyes over Rafe's head.
"I've been getting to know Rafe," said Magnus.
"He told me that was what he liked to be called. We've been doing up a bedroom for him, see?"
"I do," said Alec.
"Rafe," said Magnus.
"Raphael, do you have a last name?"
Rafe shook his head.
"That's all right. We have two. How would you feel about a middle name? Would you like one?"
Rafe broke into a stream of Spanish. From all the nodding, Alec was fairly sure he was agreeing.
Alec said, "we probably need to talk."
Magnus laughed.
"Oh, do you think so? Excuse us for a minute, Rafe."
He moved toward Alec, then stopped short. Rafe's hands were clenched hard on the edge of Magnus's robe. Magnus looked startled. Rafe burst out crying. Magnus cast Alec a wild glance, then ran his hands distractedly through his own hair. Between torrential sobs, Raphael began to eke out words. Alec couldn't speak Raphael's language, but he understood nonetheless.
"Don't let me see you, and then have to go away into the loneliness that is the world without you. Please, please keep me. I'll be good, if you would just keep me."
Alec started forward, but before he was even in the room, Magnus dropped to his knees and touched the child's face with tender hands. All trace of tears disappeared with a shimmer of magic.
"Hush," said Magnus. "Don't cry."
"Yes, of course we will, my darling." Rafe put his face down onto Magnus's shoulder and sobbed his heart out. Magnus patted his shaking back until he was quiet.
"I'm sorry,"
Magnus said at last, and rocked Rafe in the curve of one red silk arm.
"I really do need to talk to Alec. I'll be right back, I promise you."
He stood and tried to move forward, then cast a rueful glance downward. Rafe was still holding onto his robe.
He's very determined, Alec explained.
So, completely unlike any other shadow hunters of my acquaintance, then, said Magnus, and swept off his robe.
Underneath, he was wearing a tunic shirt shimmering with gold thread, and loose, ratty gray sweatpants.
Are those sweatpants mine?
Yes, said Magnus. I missed you.
Oh, said Alec. Magnus settled the robe around Rafe's shoulders, wrapping him up so he was a red silk cocoon with a startled face on top. Then Magnus knelt down by Rafe again and lifted Raphael's hands in his, holding them together. Inside Rafe's cupped palms, a tiny fountain of glitter leaped in a shining loop. Rafe gave a hiccuping laugh, full of surprised delight.
There, you like magic, don't you?
Keep your hands together and it will keep going, Magnus murmured, then made his escape while Rafe was watching the fountain. Alec took Magnus's hand, pulling him out of the new room into the main loft and through into their bedroom. He shut the door and said, I can explain.
I think I might understand already, Alexander, said Magnus. You were away a day and a half, and you adopted us another kid. What happens if you go away for a week?
I didn't mean to, said Alec. I wasn't going to do anything without asking you, only he was there, and he's a shadow hunter, and nobody was looking after him. So I thought I could take him to the Institute here, or to Alicante.
Magnus had been smiling, but now he stopped. Alec felt even more alarmed.
We're not adopting him? Magnus asked. But can't we? Alec blinked.
I thought we were, Magnus said. Alec, I promised him. Do you not want to?
Alec stared at him for another instant. Magnus's face was tense, intent but confused at the same time, as if Magnus was baffled by his own vehemence. Suddenly, Alec was laughing. He thought he was waiting to be sure, yet this was better, as all the best things in his life were better than any dream that had come before. Not Alec knowing right away, but seeing Magnus know right away. It was so sweet and so obvious that this was exactly the way things should be. Seeing Magnus experience the instant instinctive love as Alec had with Max. As Alec learned with Raphael the slow, sweet, and conscious way of love that Magnus had learned with Max. Opening a new door in their familiar beloved home, as if it had always been there. Yes, Alec said, breathless with laughter and love. Yes, I want to. Magnus's smile returned. Alec pulled him into his arms, then turned so Magnus had his back to the wall. Alec cupped Magnus's face in both hands. Give me a minute, Alec said. Let me look at you. God, I missed home. Magnus's fascinating eyes were narrowed slightly, watching Alec back, and his smiling mouth was a little startled as it often was, though what surprised him, Alec didn't know. Alec couldn't just look at him. He kissed him, and that mouth was against his own, the kiss making every tired muscle in Alec's body turn to liquid sweetness. To Alec, love always meant this, his shining city of eternal light, the land of lost dreams reclaimed, his first kiss and his last. Magnus's arms went around him. My Alec, Magnus murmured. Welcome home. Now when Alec asked himself, is this how you want to live your whole life? Alec could answer yes and yes and yes. Every kiss was the answer yes, and the question he would get to ask Magnus someday. They kissed up against the bedroom wall for long, bright moments. Then both stepped away from the other with a wrench. The, Alec began. Kids, Magnus finished. Later. Wait, the kids plural? Asked Alec, and then became aware of what Magnus had heard. The stealthy sound of tiny feet exiting Max's room.
That hell-born brat, Magnus muttered. I read him 8 stories.
Magnus!
What? I can call him that. It's you who can't call him that because it's infernally insensitive. Magnus grinned, then squinted at his own stained hand. Alec, I know you don't really care about your clothes, but you don't usually come home covered in soot.
Better see to the kids, said Alec, ducking out of the bedroom and the conversation. In the main room was Max, in his Triceratops footy pajamas and dragging his fuzzy blankie, regarding Rafe with wide eyes. Rafe stood on the woven rug before the fireplace, wrapped in Magnus's red silk robe, his eyes narrowed into the death stare that had frightened the other kids at the shadow market. Max, who had never felt threatened by anything in his life, smiled guilelessly up at him. Rafe's scowl faltered. Max turned at the opening of the door. He padded swiftly over to Alec, and Alec knelt down to embrace him.
Daddy, Daddy, Max caroled. This is the brother or a sister.
Raphael's eyebrows went up. He said something quickly in Spanish.
Not a sister, Magnus translated from the door.
Max, this is Rafe. Say hi. Max clearly took this as confirmation. He patted Alec's shoulder as if to say, Great job, Dad. Finally, you deliver the goods. Then he turned back to Rafe.
What are you, werewolf?
Max guessed. Rafe glanced at Magnus, who translated.
He says he's a shadow hunter.
Max beamed.
Daddy's a shadow hunter. I'm a shadow hunter, too.
Rafe regarded Max's horns with an air suggesting, Can you believe this guy? He shook his head firmly and attempted to explain the situation.
He says you're a warlock, Magnus translated faithfully, and that this is a very good thing to be, because it means you can do magic, and magic is cool and pretty.
Magnus paused.
Which is so true.
Max's face screwed up in rage.
I'm a shadow hunter!
Rafe waved a hand, his attitude one of deep impatience.
All right, my blue-ringed octopus, Magnus interposed hastily. Let's continue this debate tomorrow, shall we?
Everybody needs sleep. Rafe has had a long day, and it is incredibly past your bedtime.
I'll read you a story, Alec promised.
Max dropped his fury as swiftly as he'd assumed it. His blue brows knit. He seemed to be thinking deeply.
No bed, he argued. Stay up! Be with Rafe!
He sidled up to a stunned-looking Raphael and gave him a big hug.
I'm love him.
Rafe hesitated, then hugged Max shyly back. The sight of them made Alec's chest hurt. He cast a glance at Magnus, who had an equally smitten expression.
It's a special occasion, Alec pointed out. I was never very good at discipline anyway, said Magnus, and threw himself down beside the kids on the rug.
Rafe edged closer, and Magnus looped an arm around him. Rafe cuddled up.
How about you tell us all a bedtime story about what happened in Buenos Aires? It wasn't that exciting, Alec said. Other than, I found Rafe, I missed you, I came home. That's it. We'll have to go back and forth to Buenos Aires a few times to finalize the adoption, before we can make it official and tell everyone. Maybe we can all go together sometime.
Rafe said several swift sentences in Spanish.
Is that so? Asked Magnus. How extremely interesting. What are you saying? Alec asked Rafe anxiously. You aren't getting away with this one, Alec Lightwood, Magnus pointed at him. Not this time. I have a spy.
Alec went over to the rug, knelt down, and made earnest eye contact with Rafe.
Rafe, he said, please don't be a spy.
Rafe gave Alec a look of firm incomprehension and burst into a torrent of Spanish for Magnus. Alec was certain at least some of it was Rafe promising to be a spy any time Magnus wanted.
Sounds like you did some pretty impressive things in Buenos Aires, said Magnus at last. A lot of people would have given up. What were you thinking?
Alec picked Max up, tipped him upside down, then sideways, then returned him to the rug, grinning when Max crowed with laughter.
All I did was think about being worthy of coming home to you, said Alec. It was nothing much.
There was a silence. Alec turned, a little concerned, to find Magnus staring at him. That surprised look was on his face again, and there was a softness along with it that was rare for Magnus.
What? Said Alec. Nothing, you stealth romance attacker, Magnus said. How do you always know what to say?
He leaned forward easily, keeping Rafe held comfortably against him, to give Alec a kiss on the jaw. Alex smiled.
Rafe was studying Max, who seemed gratified Rafe was taking an interest.
If you want to be a shadow hunter, said Raphael in careful English, you have to train.
No, Rafe, said Alec. Max doesn't need to train.
I train, said Max.
Alec shook his head. His baby was a warlock. He would train Rafe, but Max didn't need to learn any of that. He looked to Magnus for backup. But Magnus was hesitating, his lip caught between his teeth.
Magnus!
Max wants to be just like you, Magnus said. I can understand that. Are we going to tell him he can't be whatever he wants to be?
He's not, Alec began and stopped.
There's nothing to say a warlock couldn't physically fight, said Magnus. Using magic to substitute for Shadowhunter attributes. It might keep him safe, because people don't expect a warlock to be trained that way. It wouldn't hurt to try. Besides, we found Max on the steps of Shadowhunter Academy. Someone might have wanted him to have Shadowhunter training. Alec hated the idea. But he'd thought, hadn't he, that he wished he could train a kid? He had promised himself he would never be the kind of father who made the walls of home feel like a trap. If you love somebody, you trusted them. All right, said Alec. I guess it wouldn't hurt to show them a few ways to stand and fall. Might get them tired enough for bedtime. Magnus grinned and snapped his fingers. Practice mats suddenly covered the floor. Max scrambled to his feet.
Rafe, head pillowed against Magnus's chest, seemed uninterested until Magnus nudged him gently. But then he got up willingly enough.
Maybe I can teach Rafe a few magic tricks as well, Magnus mused. He can't be a warlock any more than Max can be a shadow hunter. But there are magicians around. He might be a very good one.
Alec recalled a story about a magician with Shadowhunter blood, known as Roland the Astonishing, who had lived a long, happy life with his best beloved. He thought of the market and the institute mingling in the streets of Buenos Aires, of Jem and Tessa, of love and trust in a changing world, and showing his sons they could be anything they wanted, including happy. He rose and walked to the center of the room.
Boys, follow the moves I make, said Alec. Stand with me now. All together.
Through blood, through fire.
Once upon a time, in a land not so far away, there was a child who should not have been born. A child of disgraced warriors. His blood, the blood of the angels. His birthright forfeit while he slept, unknowing, in his mother's womb. A child sentenced to death for the sins of his ancestors. A child spirited away from the law that condemned, and the family that couldn't yet know how much they might someday need him and his progeny. Once upon a time, a child was lost, or at least such is the story told by those foolish enough to lose him. No one is ever lost to himself. The child was simply hiding, as his child and his child's child learned to hide, and on through the generations, evading those who hunted them, some seeking forgiveness, some seeking annihilation, until inevitably, that which had been hidden was revealed. The lost child was found. And that was the end. Later, when Jem Carstairs tried to remember how the end began, he would remember the tickle of Tessa's hair on his face as he bent close, breathed deep the scent of her, which that day carried a hint of lavender. They were in Provence, so of course everything smelled like lavender. But Tessa was alive with it. Breathing her in was like breathing in a sunlit meadow, a sea of purpling blossoms, springtime itself. That was what Jem would remember later. The desire that time stop, freeze the two of them inside this perfect moment. He would remember thinking, with wonder, that this was how it felt to be perfectly satisfied. When Tessa Gray returned to that moment, the moment before, she remembered the taste of honey, which Jem had drizzled onto a sliver of baguette and popped into her mouth. The honey, fresh from the hive behind the estate, was almost painfully sweet. Her fingers were sticky with it, and when she pressed them into Jem's soft cheek, they didn't want to let go. She couldn't blame them. Memory has a tendency to fog the mundane. What Jem and Tessa were actually doing, bickering about whether the cheese they'd acquired that morning was goat or cow, and which of them was responsible for eating so much of it that a second trip to the fromagerie was required. It was a lazy, loving bickering, as befit their sun-dappled afternoon. They'd come to this retreat in the French countryside to strategize about the lost Herondale, who they had recently discovered was also heir to the Seelie and Unseelie courts, and so in more danger than anyone had ever imagined. This estate, the use of which had been offered by Magnus Bane, was a safe, quiet place to plan where to go from here. The lost Herondale had made it very clear to Jem that she didn't want to be found, but Jem worried this was because she didn't know the depths of danger she was in. They needed to find her, warn her, now more than ever. The urgency was real, but so was their inability to do anything about it, which left many hours to fill, gazing out at the sunlit hillside and at each other. Tessa had nearly decided to give in and admit that Jem was right about the provenance. Goat, if wrong about who'd eaten the most, Tessa. When a tiny light sparked between them, like a tiny falling star. Except it didn't fall. It froze in midair, getting brighter and brighter, blindingly bright, and forming itself into a familiar shape. Tessa sucked in a sharp breath. Is that? A heron, Jem confirmed. Years before, Jem had enchanted a silver pendant in the shape of a heron and pressed it into the palm of a young woman with Herondale blood. A young woman in danger who steadfastly refused his help. With this pendant, you can always find me, he had once promised, in the silent voice with which he had once spoken. Jem had been Brother Zachariah then, still bearing the robes and duties of the silent brotherhood. But this mission and this promise had nothing to do with the brotherhood. Jem was still bound by it, would always be bound by it. I trust you will summon me for help, if and when you need. Please trust that I will always answer. The woman he'd given that pendant to was a Herondale. The last heir of the lost Herondale, and the silver heron meant that, after all these years, she needed him. As Jem and Tessa watched, the bird traced letters of fire upon the air. I turned away from you once, but please help me now. I thought I could do this on my own, but the riders are closing in. If you will not come for me, come for my boy. I thought I could buy his life with my suffering. I thought if I left him, he would be safe. He is not. Please come. I beg you. Save me. Save my child. Rosemary Herondale. The light winked out. Jem and Tessa were already in motion. In the century and a half they'd known each other, much had changed. But this truth endured. When a Herondale called, they would answer. LA traffic wasn't as bad as everyone said. It was exponentially worse. Six lanes, all of them nearly at a standstill. As Tessa inched forward, shifting lanes every time a space opened up, Jem felt like he was going to crawl out of his skin. They'd portaled from France to Los Angeles, emerging halfway across the city from the source of the distressed call. Magnus had reached out to his network of West Coast acolytes and secured them transport to get the rest of the way. The turquoise convertible didn't exactly scream incognito, but it was enough to carry them the handful of miles from Echo Park to Rosemary Herondale's house in the Hollywood Hills. The ride should have only taken a few minutes. It felt like it had been a year. "I turned away from you once, but please help me now." The words echoed in Jem's mind. He'd spent decades searching for the lost Herondale, finding her, finally, only to lose her again. But after she'd refused his offer of protection, he'd made her a promise. He would come when she called. He would save her when she needed saving. "I thought I could do this on my own." James Carstairs would always come to the aid of a Herondale. He would never stop repaying the debts of love. She had summoned him using the necklace, and he would do everything in his power to honor his promise. But, "Please come, I beg you. Save me." There was more than just one life at stake now. "Save my child." What if they were too late? Tessa put her hand on Jem's. "This isn't your fault," she said. Of course she knew what he was thinking. She always did. "I had her, and I let her walk away." Jem couldn't stop picturing it. That morning on the bridge in Paris, when he'd begged Rosemary Herondale to accept his protection. He had asked a Herondale to trust him and been judged unworthy. "You didn't let her do anything," Tessa pointed out. "She made her own choice." "The Herondale way," Jem said wryly. "You let her know you would always be there if she needed you. And now that she does, I'm twiddling my thumbs 5 miles away, useless." "Enough." Tessa abruptly swerved onto the shoulder of the road and sped past the clogged lanes, then careened onto the first exit ramp they came to. Instead of slowing down, she picked up speed as they hit the surface streets, weaving wildly from lane to lane to sidewalk. Soon, finally, they found their way into the hills, the road narrowing to a single lane of hairpin turns bounded by a vertiginous drop. Tessa didn't slow down. "I know you have superhuman reflexes, but trust me," she said, "infinitely." He couldn't tell Tessa the other reason he felt guilty. It wasn't simply that he'd let Rosemary slip through his fingers all those years ago. It was what he'd done for her since, which suddenly seemed like next to nothing. Ever since he'd sloughed off his life as Brother Zachariah and fought his way back to James Carstairs and back to Tessa Gray, the other half of his soul, his heart, his self, he'd given himself permission to be happy. They'd visited shadow markets all over the world, keeping watch for Rosemary, always searching for ways they might be able to assist her from a distance. They'd even visited the market here in LA several times, but they had found no trace of her there. What if, despite his best intentions, Jem had missed something? Some opportunity to find and help Rosemary before it was too late? What if, lost in his own happiness with Tessa, he'd enabled her suffering? The car screeched to a stop in front of a small Spanish-style bungalow. The yard was a riot of color. Monkey flowers, hummingbird sage, desert mallow, jacaranda blossoms. A gauntlet of sunflowers watched over the path to the door, nodding in the breeze, as if to welcome them. "It's like a house from a storybook," Tessa marveled, and Jem agreed. The sky was an impossible blue, dotted with cotton candy clouds, and the mountains on the horizon made it feel like they were in an alpine village rather than the middle of a sprawling metropolis. "It's so peaceful," she added, "like nothing bad could ever happen here." She was interrupted by a piercing scream. They erupted into motion. Jem shouldered the front door open, readying his sword to face whatever lay beyond. Tessa followed close behind, her hands sparking with angry light. Inside, they found a nightmare. Rosemary, lying still in a pool of blood. looming over her, a massive fairy, his body covered in thick bronze armor, a long sword raised overhead, its point aimed straight at Rosemary's heart. In many ways, Jem Carstairs was no longer a shadow hunter. But in the most important ways, he would always be a shadow hunter. He launched himself forward, a whirl of deadly motion, sword stick a silver blur as he hacked at the fairy with the full righteous force of shadow hunter rage. His blows glanced off the creature's body without leaving a single mark. Tessa raised her hands and dispatched a blinding white wave of energy at the fairy. He absorbed it without flinching. Then, almost carelessly, grabbed Tessa in one massive hand and flung her across the room. She slammed into the wall with a thud that caused Jem physical pain. Jem threw himself in the fairy's path, kicked, spun, swung the sword down sharp and sure in what should have been a mortal blow. Any ordinary fairy, any ordinary downworlder, would have been felled. This one only laughed, shoved Jem to the floor, and pinned him there beneath a massive foot, leaving Jem helpless to do anything but watch as the longsword found its mark and stabbed Rosemary through the chest. The fairy stepped back, freeing Jem to rush to her side. Too late. He tore off his shirt, pressed it desperately to Rosemary's gushing wound, determined to keep her life from draining away. Too late.
"I have no quarrel with you, Shadow Hunter," the fairy said, then gave a sharp whistle. An enormous bronze steed crashed through the bungalow's front windows in a hail of glass. The fairy hoisted himself onto the horse. "I suggest you refrain from quarrel with me."
The horse reared and leapt into the air. And just like that, horse and rider were gone. Rosemary's face was deathly pale, her eyes closed. She was still breathing, if barely. Jem put pressure on the wound, willing her to hold on. Tessa knelt beside him. He let out a sharp breath, his heart clenching. "Are you hurt?" "I'm fine, but Rosemary." Tessa gripped Rosemary's hands and closed her eyes in concentration. Seconds passed as she summoned the will to heal. He could see the effort written on her face, the torment. Finally, Tessa turned to Jem, a hollow look in her eyes. He knew what she would say before she said it. "It's a mortal wound," she murmured. "There's nothing to be done." Tessa had volunteered as a nurse during one of the mundane world wars. She knew a mortal wound when she saw one. And Jem, during his decades in the Silent Brotherhood, had seen too many shadow hunters beyond help, far too many in the Dark War. He too could recognize death in all its guises. Rosemary's eyes flickered open, her lips parted as if she was trying to speak, but she managed only a rasping breath. There was still one Herondale they could save. "Your child," Jem said. "Where is he?" Rosemary shook her head, the effort of motion causing her obvious pain. "Please," she whispered. There was so much blood, everywhere, blood. Her life streaming away.
"Please, protect my son."
"Just tell us where to find him," Jem said, "and on my life, I will protect him, I swear." He stopped, realizing there was no one to receive his promise. The shuddering breath had given way to stillness. She was gone.
"We'll find him," Tessa promised Jem. "We'll find him before anyone can hurt him. We will."
Jem hadn't moved from Rosemary's body. He held her cool hand in his own, as if he couldn't bring himself to let go. She knew what he was feeling, and it hurt. This was the joy and